Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never change anything.
And welcome to another installment of My House, and we're waiting for a guest to call in this morning. The topic we're going with, well, the topic of business law and engineering. Three of the fundamental things, not the only three, the three fundamental things that are needed in a community to build it or sustain it, and how we need, well, you got plenty of business majors, plenty of people in law school, too. Well, and we got to, anyway, we're going to get into that. We're waiting for the guests to call in, so open up the program with Curtis Mayfield track, Superfly. I saw the reboot last night. The movie reboot of it. I like the original as a classic on many different levels, but I like the way they took the new version of, well, the 2018 version of Superfly. Anyway, hopefully we're going to be back in a few minutes. Hopefully our guests will call in and we can start discussing how business law and engineering is needed, particularly people to enter in college and pick up, because business is broad. Law is broad, too. We need to break down what aspect of business do we need to study, or aspects of business we need to study, what aspects of law, and then as well as engineering.
You know, I've seen a lot of people walking around with tombstones in the on your body. Love will leave your mind.
Okay, once again, welcome to another installment of It's My House. And today's podcast is titled Business Law and Engineering, live stream number 619-768-2945. To start this podcast, well, we've already started the discussion, I want to put out some statistics here. On planet Earth, there are 36.8 billion acres of hold. That's not the stat I want to give you. Okay. 15.77 billion acres of habitable land available. Of course, there's more land available, but it's, according to these people, it's inhabitable. But there's over 15 billion acres of land suited for a human being to live on. However, we only occupy, let's see, there's an additional 36.8 billion acres of land that is considered inhabitable, but you know what I mean. You can't live on it, whatever they define that to be. Anyway, let's go with it. It's, you got over 15 billion acres of land. And man overall occupies probably less than 1% in the United States, 3% of the total land mass in the United States is urbanized. Matter of fact, I believe 75 to 80% of the population lives on only 3% of the available land mass in what is known as the United States. So there's a lot out here. Now, when you have that much density in a small space, you essentially have to that's where education comes in. You have to know how to live in those spaces. Matter of fact, if you live in the less populated areas of the United States, I'm going to use Alaska, or even Maine, or even this, I can throw Texas in there. Texas is basically Texas, which has three of the largest cities or metro areas in the United States. They have the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, Houston metro area, and San Antonio. I think all three of them are in the top 10. All right, now, to live in those cities, because of the density, the amount of people in those cities, matter of fact, let's get some additionals, because I'm going to dovetail us into business law and engineering. Let's see. To what I want. Top 10. Now let's go top 10. Top 10 cities. In Texas. You know what? No. In U.S. City. That'll make my point better. U.S. City. Okay. Top 10 largest cities in the United States. Number one, New York City, 8.5 million. Los Angeles, 3.9 million. Chicago, 2.7 million. Houston, Texas comes in at number four at 2,296,224 people. Philadelphia is number five at 1.5 million. Phoenix, Arizona, 1.5 million. San Antonio, 1.4 million. Number eight, San Diego, 1.3 million. And Dallas, Texas, comes at 1.3 million. And what's number 10? San Jose. Okay. So out of the 10 largest cities in the United States, the state of Texas has three in the top 10. That's a lot of density. Matter of fact, and so a percentage of the United States live in Texas. Matter of fact, let's see. USA population. This population. Right, the USA population and counting is 325,700,000 people. That's a whole. Let me go to the population clock because I think it's higher than that now. That's not the clock anymore. Okay, well, anyway. So, in the state of Texas, you've got, in those three metro areas, you've got, a percentage of the U.S. population lives in those three cities. Then we throw in New York City, and then San Diego, Inland Empire of California, Los Angeles metro area, and then San Francisco. It even gets, it's more density. Now, I'm saying all that to say this. When you have that many people piled into, I'm going back to Texas, there are three cities or three metro areas. There's a lot of vacant land that's available. I mean, there are parts of there's huge swaths of land in Texas where hardly anybody lives in. Let's say if you go to El Paso and then you start driving east out of El Paso on Route 10. You can go for quite a long time and not see any other human beings. However, man being man, when he's packed into these dense areas, the laws of supply and demand kicks in, and it takes more of more effort to live in these areas. That's where laws come in, business regulation, and then, of course, with all these people, because people flock to cities essentially for two things, comfort and convenience. Comfort and convenience. However, there's so much, and of course, with supply and demand, things could cost more. However, if you go to the less populated areas of Texas, California, anywhere on the planet, and you've been educated on how to live in those parts of the globe, then it's a whole new ballgame. But anyway, so the people that live in your areas where there's high density, where supposedly a college degree is needed, you're going to need to know the law. Law follows you two places. There's de facto law and de jure law. If you live in one of these larger cities, de jure law is man-made law. That's stuff when your legislators get together and they pass laws on, from traffic tickets to growing and the way you can live, all kind of ordinance, this, that, other. De facto law is essentially, if you're going back to the wilderness of Alaska and Maine, man-made law is out the door. Now you're dealing with nature. But you do want to bareface it. If you go to the wilderness of Maine or Alaska, you can probably put up your own house without using any money, but then you're going to need to know how to build a house out of what available building materials that nature's left. But in any event, if you're not happy and I'm taking for granted most people that listen to this podcast, they live in somewhat of an urban area. If you're not happy, you can go outside of that comfort zone. However, 75 to 80% of the population, that's where you need to know something about business, man-made law, which is on the books, and engineering, how to... if you want to develop your own community, those three factors play into mind. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring Warren Houston in because he gave a talk, maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, on the distinction between unincorporated communities and incorporated communities. And we'll start with there because those two are fundamental on where you live and where you might want to live. I warn you there.
I'm here, L.A. Good morning.
Good morning. Could you break that down for us, the distinction between unincorporated communities and incorporated communities, better known as municipalities?
Okay. If anybody's familiar with business organizations, it can be explained as simple as the difference between a corporation and a sole proprietorship. And we know that if we want to start a business, a sole proprietorship, DBA, is basically doing business as yourself. Pretty much the easiest form of business to start. Easiest way, you probably go down to your justice of the peace courthouse and you pay $15, $20 for that assumed name, and you just operate as a business. And your personal taxes are tied to the business. So kind of different between a corporated community or corporated city as opposed to an unincorporated city. Is it like a corporation? Corporation is much more expensive. The filing fee, which I think Texas has the highest filing fee in the nation, set up corporation in the state of Texas is $300. But the responsibility of a corporation requires that person have certain meetings, keep certain documentations, meetings be ran a certain way, and keep records for the state in case the state comes in asking questions about their corporation, policies and procedures. A corporation is also the most respected form of business because whereas with the unincorporated, or DBA should I say, sole proprietorship, once you die, that business dies also. But a corporation is set up with its own entity, it's its own entity. It has its own tax ID number. And although you may have been the creator of the corporation, once you pass on, the corporation can continue to function. And so you have a corporated city or an unincorporated town or city. An unincorporated town is just an area. Basically, those areas don't have local police, and sometimes they don't even have local fire departments. The law that is in those areas are basically your sheriff. And so when you're in areas like that, basically you are the law. You become the law. Areas like that don't have a company that picks up their trash. If they do, and this is how a lot of companies have made money when it comes to collecting trash. You know, a lot of people started businesses and went to those areas, those rural areas, and charge them for their trash because you're pretty much responsible in an unincorporated city for everything. You're pretty much responsible for your trash, whatever. You become the law there. But an incorporated city such as Houston, Texas, which have about 4 or 5 million people in it, someone came and bought this land that you call Houston, Texas, whatever your major city is, and they developed that land. And once developing that land, they developed it, in my opinion, for profit. Then they brought in a police department. They brought in a fire department. They brought in a city dump. And all these things you don't normally pay for directly. You pay for them out of your taxes, be it just state taxes. You know, like Texas, we don't have a state tax. There's other ways we get it, but sometimes state taxes and your local taxes, municipal taxes, these things pay for that. And so you're more governed in a city, in a municipality, than you are in an unincorporated city. And so in knowing that, as far as especially people of color, we haven't even thought about the concept of starting their own city. As you can go online now and you will look and you will find cities for sale. So there are certain areas that can be mapped out where, you know, a group could go in and buy those areas and develop those areas and incorporate those areas and become an incorporated city. So that's, I guess, in depth, the best way to explain it as far as the difference between a incorporated and unincorporated city.
Okay, matter of fact, Warren, Let's see, I'm reading right now. Houston was founded by land speculators. I think it was two brothers. Houston was founded by two land speculators on August 30th, 1836,
yes.
At the confluence of Buffalo Bayou and White Oak Bayou, a point now known as Allen's Landing, and incorporated as a city on June 5th, 1834. The city's name is former General Sam Houston. Well, the bottom line is, like you said, every town basically was founded to make money for somebody, you know.
Yeah.
And you, one of them.
Yeah.
Just one of many.
Mm-hmm.
One of many. Now, okay. The people who founded Houston or any town, I guess the next thing they do is they own the town, they can make up their own rules and regulations or have a process through, you know, the municipal charter on how laws were made in that particular city or community.
You know, every city has its own rules. I think I'm just speaking off the top of my head without research, but I'm pretty sure there are rules by the state and the United States and the federal government that they have to adhere to, so they can move around within that parameter of whatever those federal government and state government rules are. So therefore, there's going to be a lot of familiarity in each state, and there's going to be some differences when you go to different states, the way they do business. You know, because one thing about Texas, and Texas is not the only one, Texas is one of the few places when it comes to mortgage foreclosures. Texas is considered what's called a non-judicial state, and Florida, I believe, is a judicial state. And what that basically means, if someone decides to foreclose on your mortgage property here in Texas, they don't need to take you to court. You sign documents through the deed where they can just automatically foreclose on you. In order for you to stop them, you have to take them to court. Whereas in Florida, cannot foreclose on anyone without taking them to court. You have to take them to court first. So that's just state rules that the city would have to adhere to, no matter what other things they may want to do. But there are certain things in the municipality that may be different in one municipality that is different in another.
Okay. Let me read a little bit more about the founding of Houston, Texas. The Allen brothers, Augustus Chapman Allen and John Kirby Allen, two brothers, explored the town sites of Buffalo Bayou and Galveston Bay. According to historian David McComb, the brothers, on August 26, 1836, bought from Elizabeth E. Parrott, wife of T.F.L. Parrott and the widow of John Austin, the south half of the Lower League, over 2,000, actually about 2,214 acres, which is 896 hectares of land, a tract, granted to her by her late husband. They paid $5,000, of course. They paid $5,000, but only 1,000 of it in cash. Notes made up the remainder. The Allen brothers ran their first advertisements for Houston just 4 days later in the Telegraph and Texas Register, naming the notional town in honor of President Sam Houston. They successfully lobbied the Republican Texas Congress to designate Houston as the temporary capital. This is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Now, of course, dozens of other people have done towns, but what they did, they were pretty good promoters,
mm-hmm.
And they bought in engineers and. Well, anyway, I'm gonna turn the baton back over to you. This is just two people, so you're right. Every town, basically, the water coming on, somebody owns it.
Right, right, and again, it goes back to a statement that I always talk about. And this is what we have to realize as being still citizens of the United States. Every nation on earth identifies with either their race, ethnicity, or culture. The United States is the only nation on this planet that does not identify with that, because we are a nation of immigrants. So what is it that we identify with? We identify with the idea of becoming something, because every nation is very different. People come out of some nations that have a caste system. You can rise no higher than what your family was locked into. So if it means your dad was a carpenter, you could rise no higher than a carpenter. Well, the United States created the idea that, you can come here and come from nothing and become whatever you want. Again, regardless of its flaws, whether it was slavery or whatever it was, those things, we've overcome them. So especially, in this speech that I'm talking now, I'm talking to African Americans, where we're so busy focused on racism, which is in a physical aspect, is a thing of the past, when we could be focused on the idea of building. And so there's nobody or no physical change to stop you, especially as we build. A conglomerate group could come together and buy some of these cities or unincorporated areas or some that may be already incorporated that's up for sale. It doesn't matter. And go and develop those areas and come up with a creative idea and become very profitable in this place that we call the United States. And so that's the idea to come from nothing and to become whatever it is you want to become. Opportunity is out there.
Okay, so let me put this out here. I'm going to Chicago on this one. You have, Chicago's got a high murder rate, particularly in the black community, black neighborhoods up there. And you got a number of them that are marching and protesting. And, they're demanding this and they're demanding that. As Pleasant Stephens would say, realistically, they have no vested interest.
Right.
Because Chicago is basically a commercial enterprise. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, the way I'm looking at it now is, why even protest and live in Chicago, New York, or whatever? Go out and find your own. And that's why I started this thing off with some statistics. There's over 15 billion acres of habitable land, and only a small portion of it occupied by man. And we're waiting on our, well, not me and you, but a lot of people, they didn't give us our 40 acres. So what would you suggest in our modern era here, 2018, 2019, people do if they want to get
through? We have what Carter G. Woodson says, the miseducation of the Negro. And that has always been our problem. We are miseducated and misinformed, or uninformed, should I say. And because of that, we are focused on the wrong thing and going in the wrong direction. It's the perception of the mind. And that's why I love history, and I love, even when I teach my law classes, to give the history of the United States so that we may therefore lay a proper foundation that the people in the class or the students in the class understand why we are where we are today. And so in looking at that foundation, and hopefully this is what I'm about to say, these things are helping some of the listeners. The United States started with the American Revolution. The first document that started the United States was the Articles of Association. And the reason why the Articles of Association was written, it was written to try to basically create a deal with the crown, because the colonists were suffering heavy taxation without representation. It's always been about money from the very beginning. And the British government was just basically taking advantage of them through taxation. And so, but even in the Articles of Association, you will see in that document, slavery was spoken about in that document. This was before the United States was started, and it was spoke against. A lot of people did not agree with slavery even from the beginning of the United States. Okay, once the American Revolution has taken place, and you have the Declaration of Independence and the American Revolution, and now you have what you call the Articles of Confederation that takes place, and from there to the United States Constitution is set up as a nation. And this nation began to grow and began to thrive on the idea that you could come from nothing and become something. And this is why people flock to this land from all over different parts of the country. These are things that we have to understand. Slavery was abolished from the time, when did the United States become the United States? What was it, like 17, was it 1776? 17?
The nation was officially formed 1776. It was abolished in 1865. So basically there was only, a lot of people talk about we were enslaved 400, 500 years. Technically, according to the birth date of the United States, slavery only existed 90 years in what we call the United States.
Yes, yes. And so this is what we have to understand. All that other stuff was done under the crown. So the United States itself, which to me says a lot looking at it, that they were able to abolish slavery within 89, 90-year time period. That says a lot because people were already split on that decision before it became a nation. So you had your slave states and you had your free states from the very beginning. It started out that way. And what actually pushed the lever was the United States Supreme Court ruling in the Dred Scott case. That was pretty much the needle that broke the camel's back that basically started the Civil War. And based on the Republican Party that was created in 1854, electing a president in 1860, just 6 years after its creation of abolishing slavery, abolishing the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which was to overthrow the Missouri Compromise, which would have allowed more slave states to expand as the United States began to expand out west. So it was a bloody battle, but they were successful in that. If we begin to look at things from a logical or a historical fact point of view instead of an emotional point of view as to what we suffered, and we did suffer as a people, then maybe we can get around some of the things that we're focusing on as this nation, as we keep trying to get something that we can't retain. We have so many people that's running around talking about reparations and not understanding why we haven't. Well, they paid the Japanese. The United States government, and we've stated this before on this show and other times, the United States government was never in the business of slavery. These were private corporations and private individuals. So, therefore, the United States does not feel responsible for reparations. Anytime the United States have paid reparations out to any people, it was because they were directly involved. So with the United States government not being directly involved in slavery and abolishing it within 89, 90-year time period because it was a conflict from the beginning, we should understand that. On the flip side, its government is related. We understand that the people that set up the government had no faith in the government in the first place. These are things we need to know and understand. And because of that, that's why the first 10 amendments was put into the Constitution to protect the citizen from the government. The people that set the Constitution up also did not want a pure democracy because they knew what happens with a pure democracy. Power corrupts people. And so therefore you have the checks and balances that are set in place to keep from a dictatorship from taking place. That's another thing that we have to look at. And then understand that a republic, this country was set up on a republic, which is ruled by law. And basically, small government. When we move away from small government, when we move away from rule by law, and we go off into a democracy, which has nothing to do with law, but what you want in spite of law, then you're headed down a long path that brings destruction. And this is why we're at an important point in United States history right now, because the real issue is not just basically your normal Republican versus your normal Democrat. This is globalism versus nationalism, and there's other people that sit here and watch the United States grow, and they want to destroy it. So you have a lot of people coming from the outside to tear down what's going on. So if we become more accountable and responsible, because the government never made any contracts that we have to, a lot of people are upset with the schools that have been closing across the nation. The government never made any contract that they owe you an education, that they owe you a job. It was that you had the ability to be yourself and you pull yourself up or you thrive as a person, as a community on your own. The structure that was put in place for government was for laws that would just keep the infrastructure going while you were allowed to be free and be who you are. These are things we need to know and understand.
True. Well, let's say some people take the, and it's a very intimidating manufacturer. It's off the charts for me even to go there. All right, because you can go out and buy your own 40 acres and start your own, unincorporated or incorporated community out here. Law. Tell us why people on an individual basis, family basis, and community basis, why we need to know some of the fundamentals of law.
Everything is based off of business and law. I mean, that's basically all you have. And the law, even as it relates to the courtroom and the courthouse, and most people don't even realize it, it starts off with natural law. A person can't, and that's one thing they realize, is that basically one of the reasons why they had to end slavery, because from the eyes of natural law, they understand that you do not enslave another human being. They understood that. But then you had those who looked at the fact that, hey, man, I'm getting over 100% profit, 200, 300% profit, because I don't have to pay for labor. So they could care less what natural law said. It was top profit in their pocket. But looking at natural law, you cannot enslave another human being. That is basically morally wrong. Natural law, even if you do it, what will eventually happen or should happen, and that's one of the reasons why slavery drew nigh to an end when it did, is because a lot of these slaves started rising up and killing off these plantation owners. I mean, they outnumbered them anyway. It was just a matter of time that they were being abused and mentally and physically abused. They're going to eventually put their head together and say, wait a minute, enough is enough. So this is why they have to stop this, because they realize eventually, based off the law of nature, that it will be totally destructive to the country. So natural law is in alignment, even with a lot of people don't believe it, but it's in alignment with the laws from the Constitution all the way down to your municipality. And you have to allow the people, the judges, who are basically a public servant, you basically have to give them jurisdiction to rule over you, whether it's civil or criminal. Even on top of that, you have to allow, pretty much curse yourself. And the way you curse yourself is one of the Supreme Court justices said. He said over 80 to 90%, and that's a huge number when you think about it, over 80 to 90% of the people are incarcerated in prisons in the United States are there by their own doing. What did that justice of the Supreme Court mean? They did not know or understand the law, because the law was basically created in your favor. But going back to the very beginning, the people that set this country up did not trust government. So if they didn't trust government then, why am I to trust government now and put the power of my future in someone else's hand without me exactly knowing what's going on? Why would I have the attitude, well, that's their stuff and it's not mine? It's the why. You live in this country, you are a United States citizen, and everything that go on, you should want to know about it or be involved in some type of way.
Well, now, what she just said, a lot of people who have a victim complex need to hear. Because anything that might go wrong, they blame it to somebody else, but they never bother to visit.
Take responsibility.
Particularly these days, you can go inside any public library and get access to, you know, the basic codes of that particular state as well as city.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what they use libraries for these days. But
we have the internet now. I mean, you have the world at your fingertips. You don't have to go to the library no more.
That's
you
true.
Just whatever you want to know is there.
That's
so
true.
There's definitely no excuse.
Well, now what suggestion do all right for people like, let's say, that might live in let's go back to Chicago. Okay. They're not interested in buying some land out in the wilderness and, you know, 40 acres and developing their own thing. They want to make it in Chicago, okay, which without a vested interest. So what do you suggest educationally that they do to survive in Chicago based on engineering, business, and law?
Maslow's hierarchy of needs basically states that a person's first instinct of thought is survival, making sure I have the basics, food, shelter, clothes. I can't focus on anything else if I don't have the basics. Okay. So I do understand that we have a lot of people that do not have the basics. But the problem with it is what I see. And it comes back to that statement that says you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Even in a lot of in those situations, whereas okay, if we put together, because you even with the government assistance, you have food stamps, you have welfare, you have housing, and although that may not be enough for you to, it's enough for you to get by. Let me just put it that way. It's enough that you would have food, clothing, and shelter. It may not be you may not be drinking Dom Perignon wine or eating lobster and steak. But it's enough for you to have food. Those things were basically put in place for you to use to your advantage. Okay, we've taken care of those needs. Now you should be able to focus on the next step. But we're not focusing on the next step. You know, we're comfortable in those positions. And normally what happens, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm going to end up writing a book about this one day. But what normally happens, those who do, and I've seen it, I've experienced it with myself, those who do make it past those lines and make it to some degree of success, normally when we turn back to go back to the very place we came to pull, give a hand up, because of the educational level, instead of them accepting it and say, hey, this is beneficial to me, you are labeled a coon, you're labeled Uncle Tom, and they don't relate. And so, therefore, again, it's bringing the horse to the water, but you cannot make them drink. A person has to get together in their own mind. They have to make up their own mind that they want change. They have to look at their situation and realize that it's something they've been doing all this time that has kept them in this situation, and it has not changed, and why it hasn't changed. And until a person does that, and it's kind of hard because I do know that a lot of these groups, you know, let's say Jim Brown. Jim Brown has done a lot for gang violence in Chicago, from where he's from. So I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people that are helped from people like Jim Brown, or people who come back and set up nonprofit organizations, or people who use government assistance. There are a few people that are helped from that. But the masses, it seems, there has been no change. And it seems that we are in a worse condition as a people now than we were 50 years out of slavery, looking at all that Booker T. Washington and the foundation he had laid on finance and economics from people, again, that have actually felt the whip of the master based on people that are totally free in 2018 and can do and go in wherever they want and please.
Yeah, I agree. Let's briefly discuss public education. I don't think going back to Chicago, not only Chicago, but I don't think, and you can look at this different ways, what they're offering from grades 1 to 12, or basically grades 1 to 12, is that at the end of those 12 years, you know how to read, write, and count. But a lot of people don't have the public education system doesn't, in my opinion, offer you education on what I would call the basic bare necessities. Although many people who go mainstream education do quite well in life. Public education is basically education to politics. So the way I'm looking at because like I said, with all this land out here, I guess it wouldn't be let's go back to the two brothers who founded Houston, Texas. You know, to a certain point, it wouldn't make sense for them through their political affiliations, to offer any building trades in the public school system, because then the people who built or renovate houses for a living in that particular city, they wouldn't get enough work. If everybody knew how to repair their own roofs, then there wouldn't be any need for a roofing company. So same with bankers. You know, bankers are not sponsoring anything or bankrolling educators or schools or colleges and all this to teach people how to build their own house without bank financing, because then the banks wouldn't have any business. So, and then with basic law, I feel many, matter of fact, you know what, I'm going to even go out on a limb today. I think, and I want feedback from the audience on this, as well as you, Ian. I think a lot of the high-profile homicides that have happened over the last few years, had the Mike Browns, the Walter Scotts, the Eric Gardner, had they known the law and how it's actually applied, I think they would be living today. And let me even go to Black Wall Street. With Black Wall Street, although kudos to that, you know, somebody bought 40 acres and they developed it. But where they developed it, they didn't get involved with the politics, the local politics of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Because you had other black communities within that state that never had any violence at all, like they did with the Black Wall Street thing. But, I mean, anyway, your comments on the importance of black folk, or anybody actually, learning the basics of the law to live. Because if you don't know the basics of how the law is applied in Chicago or Detroit or any particular area, you're really putting your life at risk. That's what I see.
I mean, I can give a simple example. Again, as I said, most people don't realize it, but the law is in their favor. Just like with a traffic stop, you know, they have to give you your Miranda rights. In other words, they have to tell you anything you say, and people don't really listen to what they're saying. They're telling you right off the bat, anything you say can and will be used against you in the court of law. So they're going to construe whatever you say against you. So in situations like that, I don't care if you're innocent, if you know you're right, the best thing to do is just keep your mouth shut. Keep your mouth shut. Why? You understand that when it comes to a courtroom, whether it's in a civil courtroom or a criminal courtroom, that the plaintiff or the petitioner, the one who brought the case for you, they must prove their case, not the defendant. So until they prove their case, there's really nothing for me to say. If you brought me before the court, you need to prove your case. And a lot of times, people mess themselves up by running their mouths and talk themselves into trouble. You know, if you brought me in here for...
I'm thinking about the late Sandra Bland. I'm thinking about the late Sandra Bland. I'm not saying that the police officer who stopped her was right, but the way I'm looking at it, she talked herself into an arrest.
On top, and this is what you have to look at, L.A., it's both wisdom and knowledge. What do I mean by wisdom and knowledge? Knowledge is one thing, understanding about what I just spoke about you know, the right to remain silent and all this. But then you have to have wisdom. What do I mean? The person that pulled you over, you don't know who this person is. You don't know if this person is crazy. You don't know if this person's wife just left them, their husband. You don't know how their mind is. So their mind may not even be clicking to what's right in the law, what's not right in the law. So in the interest of wisdom, you deal with it in a sensible manner. And then you don't hold court on the streets. You hold court in the courthouse. That's how you do that. So it's both wisdom and knowledge and understanding in whatever we do, how we operate, because sometimes it's not what you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
That's true. And you're right, you know, you don't know, because the people that had put on that uniform and whatnot, you don't know, they could be had PTSD, or they could have had a bad morning, they could have had a fight at home. A lot of them are probably afraid to go out because they don't know who they're going to run into on a traffic stop. You just don't know. So you're right. The best thing to do, I know when I pulled over in the past, I basically, by the time they reached my window, the window's all the way down, and I have my license, registration, and proof of insurance in hand and my hand out the window for their comfort and convenience and speed. When I don't speak until spoken to, and then if you, in my experiences, you know, within 5 minutes, let's put it this way, in less than 10 minutes, if the computer's running slow on their end, they're going their way, which they want to do because everybody wants to go home. The police want to go home unscathed. We want to go unscathed. So you're right. That's very good advice. Keep your mouth shut.
I had a brother call me up yesterday with an employment question. His son works at this discount tire company or something like that. And so he wanted to know, the manager came and told his son he couldn't wear any facial hair, they had to have a clean face. So he said, my son did that. And he said, now the manager's back in his face, he has a part cut in his head, and he told him he can't have the part. He wanted to know, well, what can I do about it? I said, well, absolutely nothing. And it kind of upset him. He got his emotions. They, you know, well, he's just picking at me. I said, well, he may be, but how do you know that? I said, besides, you know, and no, the government does not owe you a job. Nobody owes you a job, for that matter. And on top of that, especially a place like Texas is a right-to-work state, you can get fired. They don't have to give you a reason. They just come and say, we don't want you no more. As simple as that. I said, so your son's going to have to make up his mind to whether he wants to get rid of the part, or if not, he can just go find him another job. It's just that simple. And the brother got all his emotions, and he didn't want to hear that. But that's what it is. It's just that simple. So once we understand how the rule book plays and what the policies and procedures are, it's not a policy. It's in the policy about the facial hair, but it's not a policy in the book. I say, well, it doesn't matter. If they want to change their policy or the manager doesn't like the part, then it's just that simple. Either you get rid of the part or you find them another job. Just that simple. And so a lot of times we don't like what's happening. We don't like the status quo, and we have problems with that.
That's true. Now, you know what? Before we go to phone lines, in a lot of your churches, regardless of race or color, you have, you know, a lot of them have a singles ministry, a homeless ministry, sick and shut-in ministry, and a jail ministry where they actually go to the jail and do whatever they're going to do, fellowship with the people. They have a Bible study with them. What I find interesting, and I don't know what's going on in every church, but I haven't run across any faith-based organization that has a law literacy ministry or outreach to basically teach people.
No,
the basics,
right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Because I believe that if they, like had a people's law study group, then a lot of people that are in there, when they get out, won't go back, and a lot of people that are not in won't go in. Any suggestions on how we can get something like that possibly going? Because, you know, a lot, like you mentioned before, a lot of people don't know anything about, don't call a lawyer until they actually need one, and then it's too late.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I think especially people of color, we are very spiritual people, so a lot of us go to church, and so that would be a great place to implement the People's Law Study Group. I've had several churches here in Houston talk to me about it, but nothing had never happened as far as instituting such a program. But I think that would be a great place to institute that program for because especially those people that follow that pastor, they're going to pretty much, you know, the pastor can they're going to pretty much go with whatever the pastor says. So if the pastor sees the benefit in it, which he should, then the church would be a great place to do it. Now, as far as going about doing it, maybe the marketing strategy, maybe I need to change up my marketing strategy a little bit, maybe get more people's attention toward it. But it would be a great place to implement this program.
Yeah, we had a lady on here before. Her name's right on the tip of my tongue. She has a thing. She's out of Arkansas, where they do a once a year thing called Law Day, where they have judges, policemen, lawyers come in and answer questions. Primarily the people who, you know, they did some time. They just do that once a year. But you know what? A lot of people who take advantage of that, they don't want to pay. Anyway.
We need more than just a law day. We need more than just a law day. What you said reminded me of when I was in undergrad school, I met this white guy from Israel, and he told me something. He said, every citizen of Israel must do 2 years in the military. Every male citizen of Israel has a requirement. You have to do 2 years in the military. You don't have to make a career out of it, but you have to do 2 years in the military. I thought that was a very powerful statement. And so, therefore, because we know everybody can't be lawyers or can't be attorneys, there's no way. But if that became a requirement, so everybody have to do 2 years of legal study, you don't have to go on to become an attorney or a lawyer, but you would have the foundation of understanding how things work. And it would definitely make a major difference, especially in black communities across the United States of America.
Now, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Now, you know, the government wouldn't like that. People are already in government because they would be losing some control. But that, particularly in the African American community, that needs to be implemented. I guess you can do it on a family basis, you know, particularly the kids are young. Let's go to our phone lines. 314 area code, your mic is open.
You know, you also got to take in consideration, be talking about the formation and acquisition of land, that up there in the Northeast, that you had the land barons. Then you had, I guess what we call today was squatters, who took over sections of land barons' land by way of what's now be called aggressive possession. And they took it over and add value to it, and therefore was allowed to claim it when it came down to a legal dispute. And one thing that they also had to their advantage was they utilized weapons to protect what they had acquired. Something that may have been not very utilized with the Greenwood section of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I was listening intently when you made mention that those other settlements didn't have that problem that Tulsa had. Maybe one time you might elaborate on that a little bit more, since you're pretty astute on that. Then another thing that you got to consider too, Warren, is that the United States has been identified as consisting of 11 sub-nations. And those 11 sub-nations have their distinct cultures, their distinct ideologies.
Right.
You know, whether it's the Midlands, where I live at, and the things that they are committed to. You know, the western states, where they don't want to have any interference from those in the Far East. The Far West is a conservative West, and they resent Eastern interests. Then you got areas like New France, which New Orleans lie within, and they're about the most liberal of all of them. They would accept anything, homosexuality, same-sex marriage, and everything else. You look at the Appalachia, well, they don't want no government interference. Your area, Warren, El Norte, they have values of independence, self-sufficiency, and hard work above all else. So that's got to be considered. And blacks that live in these areas, I don't, I'm still, you know, blacks are not the same all over this country. They have different ideas, different opinions, and so on and so on. And it had to be shaped by them existing in these areas amongst these other cultures. In New York, for instance, blacks up there, now blacks up there in Minnesota is a whole different breed of people. When you listen to what they say, how they talk, and so on and so on, and the things that they have been influenced by. So that's got to be considered. You can't go without it because, I mean, look at what people have, some of these groups have tried to do, and they continue to try to do it today. And I was arguing with a guy, I wasn't arguing, he was talking loud and getting argument like you always do. And I asked him, I said, why is it when we have conversation, you always get argumentative and start talking loud? But I asked him, I said, well, identify this we and they. And he couldn't do it. And you have these groups that try to do the very same thing. I showed a guy a magazine of the National Society of Black Engineers. And the first thing he told me, he ain't the first thing, but he made mention, well, when they go to work for these corporations, do they ever come back to build their, he put emphasis on, and work with their emphasis on their people? And I say, well, they don't have no obligations to their people other than their immediate family. That's why come they went through the process of attaining the education and the skills to make themselves marketable. So that's the way it is. That's the way we have to realize this reality that you're not dealing with a contentious people. Now, you know, another thing that eventually would change as time go on is that blacks are moving back to the South. But the deep South still have that West Indies style slave reminiscence mentality that permeates within the society. You ever recognize that yourself, Warren?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Most people, I have to laugh because most people, I've had people that have dealt with here in Houston that weren't from Houston. And, you know, when they talk to me, and they have to ask me, are you from here? I say, yeah. Well, you don't talk like the rest of these people here. So I've had that happen to me on several occasions. So, yeah, I know. It's here.
Yeah, and deep South L.A., they fight against government regulation that threatens their, quote-unquote, individual liberty. Now, here's the thing with blacks. Blacks have depended on government, especially the Supreme Court, in order to help them establish and take advantage of, shall I say, live out their liberties. So if they go back to the South and having come from, having developed a culture that's centered around that reality, then how are they going to fit in? Well, what's going to happen is that they're going to form their own autonomous areas. That's the only thing I can see. They're not going to blend in. So you ain't going to blend in and change other people. You're going to either adapt or you're going to either form your own autonomous area in order to hold on to the values that you have.
Right.
And
now,
I want to say, go ahead.
You said something that needs to be said on a lot of these blogs and vlogs that are on YouTube, Blog Talk, et cetera. You have, I'm going to take it one example. You have, like, if there's no blacks nominated for the platform of Hollywood for the Academy Awards, then we have blacks that, you know, sitting in races or whatever. My whole thing is stop trying to get recognition on somebody else's platform. Build your own platform. Tulsa, Oklahoma. All right. These were, and there's nothing wrong with O.W. Gurley buying the 40 acres and developing it. But the thing is, and here's the distinction between what happened in Black Wall Street. These were black folks that were trying to get recognition and live in essentially hostile KKK territory within the city, municipality of Tulsa, Oklahoma. there were 50 other black townships, municipalities at that time, to say nothing of other black communities, but they were all remote with rural communities, and they were left alone because they were rural. They got their own platform. I'll put it that way. They didn't try to get on anybody else's platform. They had their own platform to this day. But a lot of people who cry racism and whitey this or what, these are people, in my opinion, trying to integrate within somebody else's platform. And these people don't want you on their platform. So if they don't want you, it's just like a man trying to go out with a woman and she does not want you, she does not like you. Why stalk her?
Why? Mm-hmm. And you know, in the
go out
in Black Wall Street,
get some women that single.
In Black Wall Street, you hear a narrative that government bombed that city. Well, that wasn't government planes. That was a private plane. That was a crime that was committed
exactly
by a private individual.
Private plane that did it. Right.
Now, I want to make a comment on one other thing. I want y'all input. We know that blacks form about 26%, maybe less, 24% of their population is in a class that's called poverty. And we know that government will allocate a limited amount of resources toward alleviating that poverty and hoping that the results get the people out of poverty. Now, but look at these individuals that's coming from Central America, Honduras. If you like it or not, Black America are the best impoverished people in the world. The poverty that they live under may be damn near middle class in some other areas of the world. Take India, for instance, in Nepal. And see, that's what these people are looking at. Now, another thing.
You know, Kiyaki, middle class, the wealthy, according to the economy that they come from.
Yeah. Now, look at this. If you got limited resource, let's put a number to it and say it's 20. That's applied to the poverty-stricken blacks. And if you bring these others into the country where their poverty would give a number of 10, 10 and 20 is 30 divided by 2 is 15. Blacks got less and they got more. You follow me? When they come to the country, they're going to be biding for those limited resources, because no matter what you think, people that are not in poverty don't want to give up what they got, or bits or pieces of what they got, and apply it to the poverty, because that's where it's going to come from. Where else is it going to come from? So if blacks are at a level of 20 and these people coming from Central America is at a level of 10, 10 and 20 is 30 divided by 2, you're at 15 now, blacks. And, of course, they have increased, gotten better than what they were where they came from. It's at your expense. That's why I think that they need to resist it. Now, that those two groups, at some point in time, they're going to be wanting more. And where are they going to get it from, Warren? They're going to get it from you and me. They're going to want to start chipping off and taking little bits and pieces of what we have in order to increase them from the 15 back up to the 20 and on beyond. And that comes from taxation, voting for taxes, voting for politicians, who's going to have that in mind, like Maxine Waters is saying that the tax reform is benefiting the rich and so on and so on and so on.
The wealthy, the rich, yeah.
That's what they're doing. I mean, think about it. They are attacking those who have. You don't work hard. You don't send your kids to school. And all the things that has been prescribed and carved in stone and done to be able to reach the level that you at. And not saying, and see, we're not saying that these others don't have those opportunities, because I told you yesterday I was going to the school and talk to that lady, talk to this principal. And she was very knowledgeable. 46 years old, I asked how old she was. And she told me that Pianchi, only 10% of the third graders are reading at level. And I say, well, you know, the only way from my experience to help alleviate that problem is that you're going to have to get volunteers to come in, and each volunteer work with one or two students. And that's what has to happen. But I put the call out to some of our red, black, and green groups. They ain't doing that. They will march in the street and so on, which is all right. But also, if you want to champion this type of education, this is a cultural themed school, African-centered, per se. But if you want what you support and have championed and advocated to be successful, then you're going to have to go in and help these students, because these students, these kids are coming from backgrounds that is not supporting where they are trying to get. That's another thing the teacher said. Somebody had mentioned to them, and I told her, I said, well, also what would be nice is if you had boarding schools where you could keep them 24 hours a day. She said somebody mentioned that. Because what they have recognized is that there's a lack of support for whatever the reason. People can give it the excuse of their vestiges of slavery or whatever, but it exists. And the method that you're trying to alleviate this problem alone is not working, has never worked. And when it does work, the gain compared to what you're putting into it, if it was an automobile engine, you wouldn't get up to 5 miles an hour. So another thing I told her, I said, you have students, and she agreed with me, that don't belong here, because they are coming from just the opposite type of homes and also involvement with their families that help to promote them to a level where they may be classified as third grade, but they don't belong in the third grade. They are above the other third graders that they're around them. They don't belong there. They need to be put forward so that they can be challenged on toward their goals. So those are the things that you face with, and it's a reality. And until we face the reality, I mean, the way it should be. And another thing, not facing the reality don't mean that people ain't moving forward, because blacks are moving forward. They may not be moving forward at the rate that we would like to see, nor they're not moving forward, whereas they would be able to contribute to the overall progress of the nation, at least based on their percentages in the population. The nation would be further along if their 5% of engineers would increase to 13 or 15% than where it is now. So I just want to put that out there.
All right. Did we lose L.A.?
I don't know what happened to him.
You know what? I was talking and had myself on mute.
Okay.
Warren, any comments to wrap up for today?
I guess it's pretty much the same conversation. Maybe we need to continue to have these conversations. Maybe someone is listening who will be affected by these conversations. But we have to apply ourselves to both wisdom and knowledge. Knowledge is the things of education that you can get out of a book, and wisdom is having the experience to guide yourself through the situation once you obtain the knowledge. And so I would just advise all people that are listening to do that, to seek knowledge and wisdom and move forward. Because if we had, let's say every family had at least one lawyer or one lawyer in it, then that would definitely make a major change and difference in how things are taken care of, how things are handled.
Yeah, you need somebody
need somebody in the prison for that. On that note, thank you, Warren. Thank you, Bianca. Thank you, all listeners. Everyone have a good rest of the day.